There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We are live from the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, and we will be here, with this show till 2 o'clock today. Of course, special outdoors tomorrow from 11 to noon and be on site throughout the weekend. So we get started here, too. Maybe you're on the way to the island, and you might have a great chance to stop by and see my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. David, let's talk some inventory.
Afternoon, Sean. It's hard to be serious after that hearing that intro every time. Correction, you know. We've got a great inventory, and I know we sound like this is a recorded conversation, but it's not. We are continually getting nice trade-ins in from all over the place. Stuff we're buying from individuals, stuff we're buying from dealerships. Our inventory is as good now as it's been in the last 5 years. I mean, as far as selection, and different colors, different equipment, different. They're just prices, everything. We're across the board. We're in good shape.
And also, like you talked about the other day with me, you're in great shape when you talk about financing. We always talk about the inventory of vehicles, but you kind of got an inventory of financing, too. I mean, the old idea was, hey, somebody go get financing and then come see you, but they're with you, you're going to show them all these different people. And some lenders, you said, are better for some buyers, and some lenders are better for other buyers.
And that's one thing that we try to do is we try to pair you up with the right lender for your situation. And we've got lenders for every single situation. You know, the mortgage rates ticked up a little bit or went up quite a bit. Our rates on primary side ticked up just a hair, but they're still really good. And we're in good, great shape with our banks and lenders. We've got good relationships with them. We just need to see if we can help somebody.
Okay. So tell them how to find you.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068 or go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com.
Thanks, David.
Have a good weekend.
Absolutely. David McCrary checking in from LCM Motor Cars. And, yeah, we continue our discussion about the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo, the 90th, taking place now on Dauphin Island. And it's good. This man often comes into studio. Well, this is a studio as well, but comes to the main studio with me. But now I've parked the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit. When you come down here, you see our van. Our studio is inside this van, so I brought it close to where he's working hard this weekend, Dr. Sean Powers, with the University of South Alabama and Dauphin Island Sea Lab, and El Presidente of the judging world at the rodeo. Good to see you.
Good being here, especially in the air-conditioned comfort of your studio.
That is right. This is why I can do a show, because I got the AC in this van. And I will say this, so radio does not have a smell component to it, but I'll say this. So we were in here, and things have been smelling one way, and then Dr. Powers comes in, and I go, that man's been in fish all morning. I'm just, you have the fish sent on it. You've had your hands in them today.
Yes, sir. It's the smell of money to me.
That's right.
I mean, it's how I make a living. So it does.
Fishmas, you call it.
Fishmas is all my graduate students called it, deep sea fishing rodeo. Fishmas.
Explain that to people too. That because there's one angle of this that recreational anglers were out fishing trying to catch fish, and it's Fishmas for us, but for the science it's also Fishmas. Why is this unique?
It's unique in that, you know, we have, and I don't know what the final ticket sales numbers will be, but we have 4,000 fishermen going out there to collect specimens for us, is the way we think about it.
Yeah.
They think about it in terms of the boat.
We're trying to win things, you're right,
and
have a big time.
Like that, but they're going out and sampling for us. So We have projects with most of the species, so that's 33 species plus all the most unusual category species. That's just a tremendous opportunity. We have students working on flounder, triple tail, red snapper, grouper, all of these things. And the fishermen bring us not only fish, but they bring us the largest fish they can find.
Which is important,
which is important
for science.
Because we want to see the trends in the large fish in the population, and we can find out important information about biology, growth, by sampling the large fish. But large fish are rare. It would take us hundreds of days out on the water, a price that I couldn't pay for ship time, to get those large members of the population. So this not only is unique because we see so many fish species, but also because it's that segment of the population we just don't get to monitor. And we have long-term indices now from the Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. My predecessor, Dr. Bob Shipp, started with the rodeo in the late 1980s, and his students sampled those fish. So, I mean, we have long-term records. We have long-term records from the newspaper accounts of the rodeo. The other thing the fishermen tell us that's important is we get their experience. Mm-hmm. You know, where did you catch this fish? What habitats are they occurring in? And that kind of traditional fisherman knowledge is becoming so, so important to what we do.
Has that ever been something that y'all didn't expect? It's like somebody brings in whatever fish, and we caught it in this kind of environment. And you were like, well, that's different than what the accepted areas of those fish would be, or something like that.
Absolutely. So one of the prime examples was 4 or 5 years ago when we were coming off those short snapper seasons and the average size of snapper was so large. That same time, people were catching snapper at the Middle Bay Light. And these reports just gave us an indication that stock is healthy and recovered. And, you know, the other thing that's just amazing to us is how much we've learned about gray snapper since gray snapper became a category. I guess people call it mangroves,
yeah.
Black, a few things. But gray snapper and how abundant they are at smaller sizes in the bay and how finicky they are.
Oh, they're the worst. They're one of my favorite fish to chase, my favorite snappers to chase, but they're ridiculous. That's what makes it fun, though. I mean,
and that tells us something, because when the fishermen are giving us reports like that, and we're saying, well, gray snapper aren't that abundant because we don't see many of them caught, and then we figure out, well, you have to be pretty skilled,
yep,
and have to be targeting them. And now we have the underwater videos where we see gray snapper are very abundant on reefs. The catch data can't be believed because it takes such skill to catch them. So that's knowledge that we have
from
the
fishermen,
that informs the science, because if we're just looking at the numbers, then we're going to come to a very different conclusion. And the wonderful thing, too, about the rodeo is not only the opportunity to sample, but the fact that my students have to engage with the public. Some scientists, this is going to surprise you, are kind of shy,
yep,
like their books. But in fishery science, we have to hear from the fishermen. So a lot of these students, this is their first opportunity to ever work so hard sampling fish, but also their first opportunity where they have to ask the public questions and they have to engage with the public. And some of them might not be good at it and they should choose a different science field. But those that really hone their skills on sampling, but also talking to the public, learning how to explain things at a level without using jargon where the public understands it. And also really learning how to see those younger kids that come by, mm-hmm, and realize their roles at 20 to 26 years old, they can inspire those little kids.
Right.
Somebody inspired them at some point in time. And it was probably a random encounter like they're having here. And so it's so important, not more important than the sampling, is the experience it gives the students interacting with the public. So I always encourage the fishermen or the spectators, ask them what they're doing. I mean, you know, sometimes the answers might be a little mumbled, and they'll get better over time. But ask them, because they want to talk about it.
Yeah, they're fishermen.
They need to learn how to do those things. And so, no, it's just a great experience overall. When you come to the dock, you'll see the science footprint is just as large as the rodeo footprint. Mm-hmm. And there's just as many of my staff from the university and the Sea Lab as there are JCs putting it on. So it's a wonderful partnership. It's an old partnership, and it's one that other rodeos don't have. And the other fishing tournaments really don't also have the scientific expertise that the rodeo has. I mean, we identify those specimens. We weigh them. We give totally independent measurements. I don't care who wins or who loses. You know, and so I think that's important with the JC so involved in the community that they really have an independent person that or staff now that comes in and does this that can't be questioned. So,
you know, and going back to something you said a second ago, just a side note, you hear the term well-rounded education. It really is the fact that you take, because people would think scientists, y'all don't care about interaction, but you are getting these young scientists to learn interpersonal skills. It would think that it wouldn't be, if you look down the disciplines, you wouldn't think the discipline of science would need the interpersonal skills, but absolutely, you're introducing them to that. And you're right. I've often said the person that knows stuff but can explain it in language I can understand, I think they're the smartest person in that subject. When they can take, you know, not the jargon, they can put it, and not, it's not dumbing down, it's just using terms that we use in regular English. And that person, I think, knows it better. The person who knows it best can explain it easiest.
Yeah, and I always tell my students the first day they show up, who's your best scientist that you've ever heard about? And they mention a couple, but one that's often mentioned is E.O. Wilson.
Yes.
And Ed is a native Mobile, or was a native Mobilian. Ed was famous because he could write and communicate. I mean, the science he did was almost tangential. It was the fact that he could write and communicate. And so, you know, getting those skills, especially, you know, when we talk about, you know, natural resources, so any resource management, whether it be hunting, freshwater fishing, marine fishing, the only reason we have jobs is because people value that resource. Mm-hmm. They may value it for a variety of different reasons. Usually it's so they can harvest, but there's a variety of different reasons. So that's a different type of communication than you need versus a particle physicist or something
right. Because
you know, we have to constantly be able to justify to the state why we receive taxpayers' money to do our studies, and that justification isn't in journal articles. That's us interacting one-on-one with the public.
Coming right back, more with Dr. Sean Powers. We are live at the 90th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, and we continue to be live from Dolphin Island at the 90th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Big thank you to our sponsors making this possible. Tackle This, Tobias Comer Law, and Greer's Markets. And speaking of Tobias Comer Law, they sent me some notes here, and I thought this was pretty interesting. You know, we talk about, you know, safety on the water, and they pointed this out, though, because talking about what you do with a powerboat. But they said, under Alabama law, canoes, kayaks, and stand-up paddleboards are considered to be vessels and are subject to PFD requirements. So if you didn't know that, if you said, well, I'm just on the kayak, according to state law, you got to have a PFD. So the paddleboard people, the kayak canoe people, you got to have a PFD. So heads up to that. And a good point, too, they sent here, and I'm on the same page. They said holidays are not the time for novice boaters to learn to operate their crafts. Y'all take that one into account. If you're new into boating, welcome. I'm so excited that you're into it and fishing. But maybe the first time to launch and go out, it wouldn't be the Alabama Deep Sea Fish and Rodeo or Independence Day weekend or something like that. So take that into account. A big thank you to the local law firm at Tobias Comer Law for being part of our broadcast today. And we continue our conversation with Dr. Sean Powers. And the van now smells a lot like fish, all kind of different fish. I don't know if it smells like shark yet or not, but just had a tiger shark come in, didn't you?
Yeah, a 601-pound tiger shark come in. And that's pretty early. We don't usually see the sharks that big coming in this early, but obviously some fishermen got lucky.
Well, that's a heck of a big tiger shark, but that's not, I mean, they get bigger.
Oh, tiger sharks get really big. The biggest, the rodeo record is about 950 pounds. The IDs weren't great in the past, but that had to have been a big tiger shark. So tiger sharks will easily go plus 1,000 pounds. They don't become reproductively mature to between 250 and 300 pounds. So
that takes a while.
That takes a while. And, you know, the good thing for us is the fishermen caught it. It's well within the regulations, and we get to sample it. And I did not see whether it was a male or female. I didn't see which way it was spun. But we'll age that fish as well from the vertebrae. We'll get a good idea of its reproductive capacity. And tiger sharks are a shark that we believe is healthy, but it's about to go through a stock assessment procedure. So the data we collect here will directly be used in the stock assessment. And several stock assessments for sharks have used rodeo specimens.
Oh, wow.
Several species, the oldest aged shark we have, comes from the deep sea fishing rodeo, and that's so important that we understand how long these can live.
What is that? What's the oldest age shark?
Oh, I'd have to look that back up here. It's probably was a hammerhead, and I think, you know, in the mid 20s. But sharks can be much older than that.
Well, that's what I was wondering too. So, like warm water sharks, like, you know, people like the Greenland shark that can be over 100, right, or 200 years old, something like that. But it lives in obviously cold waters. Are Gulf sharks, are they 20 years, 50 years?
Probably more in the 20 to 30 year lifespan for most of them. The one thing I do want to remind anglers of is be sure of the shark identification. There's a tutorial online from National Marine Fisheries Service under the highly migratory species page. It'll show you how to identify these sharks. Tigers are really easy. They have stripes. So, you know, most people don't mistake tigers, but bull sharks.
That's the other category.
That's the other category. There is a lot of sharks that look like a bull shark, especially if you're not used to catching sharks. So sandbar sharks, a lot of people mistake those, and that's a prohibited species right now. You don't want that on your boat. And the only two species we're taking is bull sharks, tiger, and they both have to be above 80 inches because we don't want to kill a lot of sharks unnecessarily.
And you said a lot of the value is in the bigger,
older ones is the question marks for us.
Yeah. So, and the bull shark thing, we just got a minute or two here, but we can come back after the break and talk more about this. You know, people focus on bull sharks a lot because they're like, well, bull sharks go into fresh water. Right, they go up the rivers, and it fascinates people. But bull sharks, I mean, in the Delta, bull sharks.
Absolutely, bull sharks go up. I think the furthest they recorded one is like in Missouri up the Mississippi River.
Y'all think about that. It's a long way.
But, you know, we're finding more marine species do this. My graduate student, Dylan Keene, works on flounder, and he was just sent a picture of a flounder way up the river, about 100 miles up the river.
Well, you know, the crabs show up at the dams.
Yep, that's where the flounder was caught.
So
yeah,
so they go up as far as, which makes you think, you know, without the dam system, you know, how far would these marine species, and, you know, because most people think, and they're not all the same, but, you know, marine species goes into fresh water, it dies, but not always.
No.
And they just, well, yeah, we'll come back. We'll talk more about that. Also, get your questions from the Ascension Technologies text line at 343-0106. We continue our broadcast live from rodeo headquarters here for the 90th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Dr. Sean Powers, our guest. Also, I think we'll get joined by Joey Basin from Basin Hills Farm. He's out here as well at a fishing rodeo. He's serving beef. Counterintuitive, but maybe genius. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we come back.
with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back. It is continuing coverage of the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo live from the rodeo grounds. That's where we are with the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit, our studio with a van, which gets us down here for the rodeo. And remember, tomorrow, 11 to noon, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I only take the show on the road, the outdoor show on the road, twice a year, at the boat show and then here at the rodeo. So we'll be doing that tomorrow as well. Our coverage brought to you by Tackle This, Tobias Comer Law, and Greer's Markets. And how about that? Greer's Markets supports many causes and events in our community, and especially here at Dolphin Island. The nice thing is, too, you'll pass a Greer's Market on the way to Dolphin Island. And they are a place to stop in for your groceries, obviously. But when you're there, if you go to the one there at Bailey's Corner, fishing gear, they've got that as well. And you can stock up on marine fuel. You can stock up on fishing tackle and the groceries you need for a great weekend and a great time here on Dolphin Island. As a matter of fact, right now, too, they have their 107th anniversary. How about that? We're talking about longevity. The 107th anniversary for Greer's happening this month. So you can go shop at Greer's every day for the next week, because every time you shop at Greer's between now and the end of the month, the 29th, you can register to win $7,007 worth of free groceries and other great prizes. So stop in, get registered, and get your gear for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Big thank you to Greer's, making our broadcast here possible. We continue our conversation with Dr. Sean Powers, University of South Alabama, and Dolphin Island Sea Lab, and the big judge, the presiding judge over the Supreme Court of the Fish here at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo.
It's a good way to phrase it. I've never thought that.
Yeah, so this is the SCOTUS of fish going on here. You mentioned,
you do have announcer skills, I've heard.
Yeah, something like that. It works. So, you were talking about your students working, too, and the outreach. But you also, I don't want Dr. Powers to get away with this. He's got them working like in a factory. You talked about the footprint, the science footprint. So there's where the fish are coming in, y'all, and you'll see this when you come to the rodeo, where they're judging fish and doing this. And then the sampling tent that's next door, it's like, so I used to work on an assembly line for my family, breaking down starters and alternators and then sandblasting them and all that. You've got the fish equivalent of that. Your students are at these tables and, I mean, they're working. I mean, they're not playing, they're working.
Oh, it's an assembly line. I mean, so when after we get the fish from the fishermen, they get answered a few questions, asked a few questions. It goes back, weighed, measured, samples taken, depending on which species it goes to which table, and that's all choreographed by one of my scientists, Trey Spearman, who plans for months on the layout and how the fish are going
efficient.
To flow. Exactly. Because we want to do all that. And then, you know, the rodeo guys need to turn over the docks,
mm-hmm.
especially on the dock
side. Yeah, get
side.
That boat out and get another boat
yeah.
in.
Yeah, so, I mean, usually we do everything we need to do in about 5 to 7 minutes. It's impressive.
It is. So, y'all, when you walk up, so say you're coming from land, you walk up to the right of the main way area, you'll see that tent. Go there to the fence and look over and watch those folks work. It's impressive. Speaking of the science there, a lot of text. Moz asks, does a shark otolith grow rings like a bony fish does?
So sharks don't have otoliths like bony fish do. The otolith is what we use to age a bony fish, although we couldn't use any hard part on a fish. Sometimes we can use the spines. Most often it's better to use the otolith. Sharks, we use the vertebrae. So sharks are cartilaginous, but the vertebrae harden and that cartilage is usually not reabsorbed like other cartilage is. So we're actually taking out some of the central vertebrae, and they have lines of rapid and slow growth. So we're doing the vertebrae on the sharks.
Okay, we're nerd out again because I love to do this. In the science field, too, this thing that you've told me about, if I get this wrong, the chemical signature that's left in the fish that lets you know what waters they've been in. You know, we're talking about mm-hmm. blackfish or triple tail the other day, and where the science is now, the technology that if that fish has been in brackish water, hypersaline water, there's a signature left in that fish. Even if you caught that fish in brackish water, you can tell if it was in hypersaline before, right?
Correct. And the wonderful thing about that is the otolith records that. The shark vertebrae record it. And since we can age it,
it records what kind of water they were in?
The chemistry of the water along with the chemistry of the animals they were eating. So different species, it's usually more indicative of the water chemistry than the food, but the instrument's called a laser ablation, inductively coupled mass spectrometer.
That's easy for you to say.
So we call it an ICP-MS. That instrument has been a game changer. It's a wonderful resource we have at the university, and it really allows us to reconstruct that. And, you know, we were talking about triple tail on that subject the last time I was on your show.
Right.
And here's how efficient my people are. I gave them that idea. Last week at the kids' rodeo, we collected about 10 triple-tail odalisks. They already ran the chemistry on that, and sure enough, we can see for some of them, they're coming into the bay every year and exiting. But it does look like several skip a year and stay out in the ocean. And
so then, this idea that we had, like, because we always talk about in black fishing community, like, yeah, they're offshore, and then this time of year here they all come inshore, almost like it's a mass migration. But you're saying some do, some don't.
Apparently, based now just based on 10 fish, but some do and some don't. And the other thing, wow, which is really cool, is some of them are making multiple onshore offshore trips during the summer.
Really? So they come into the bay and then they go back offshore?
That's what the chemistry is telling us. Now again, it's only 10 fish, but
I wonder what
the idea that they're... I mean, we think they're spawning in the summer. They're coming in the estuary to get fat, to get enough energy to spawn, and then probably going offshore and spawning. And then if they still have time in the season and it's still warm, they'll come back again and do the whole thing over again. But we think... and again, this is all new science that we can do because we have these specimens. So I might listen to this interview next year and say, God, what an idiot I was. But more than likely, the patterns will hold. We'll try to run about 100 fish before we say something firm.
Okay.
But it shows you what we can learn from the specimens we collect from the fishermen and the technology that we have at the university to be able to really understand a species, for example, like triple tail, that we really don't even know enough to manage. I mean, the size limits, the bag limits are all really just a guess based on history. You know, that species, we just don't know enough about to have a formal stock assessment and things like that. So, but we're learning. And we're learning because of this partnership, mainly.
Talking about them going, you know, to breed, and it makes me think of a conversation you and I had back, gosh, months ago, when the whole world was on alert for sargassum geddum, or whatever we're going to call it, you know, the massive amount of sargassum that was coming and it impacted Florida beaches and all that, and we talked about it maybe coming around into the Gulf. My interpretation here is completely anecdotal. You know, I think the furthest I've been, you know, I was a couple of weeks ago, I was out 50 miles. I hadn't seen what I thought was a ton of sargassum. Did it stop out there? Did it not come to the beach?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the latest satellite imagery from the University of Miami or FIU. So I couldn't say, but my experience, and now we've taken about 10 or 12 offshore sampling trips, is the same as yours. I thought sargassum was more abundant a couple of years ago.
Yeah, me too.
Than it was this year. That doesn't mean it's not still going to come our way in our beaches. And I was actually hoping for a little bit more sargassum because it's such an important nursery habitat.
And that's what people might not realize. You know, but by the time it gets to shore, it's one thing. But when it's offshore, all of us fishing offshore love to see weed mats and weed lines and troll and do all that. But if you ever hopped over with the bass and snorkel beyond that, it's not just the dolphin that we're catching, or mahi-mahi for people, or, you know, kings or wahoo or billfish or tuna. There's so many little... It's crazy that how many little fish are under there.
And I know it's a nuisance for people on the beach, but even when it goes to the beach, it's an incredible important resource for the shorebirds and the birds, because they're coming through and pecking all those little critters off and getting their food that way. So, you know, too much of it, obviously, on the beach is a bad thing. But like you, I have not seen any sargassum mats around here that weren't anything but our typical usual.
But it is a nursery offshore, right?
I mean, oh, it's absolute nursery. Yeah, I mean, it is really the only nursery. I mean, pretty much sargassum is an oasis in a desert of no habitat.
Right.
I mean, so, and because it's the only surface habitat for those species.
Right, because if fish don't come inshore to reproduce, where do they, like, It seems like a dolphin fish, mahi-mahi, something like that. Is that where they...
Yeah, they're going to... And a triple-tailed seal. Yeah. They're going offshore to spawn so those little fish can find sargassum and get some protection from the, you know, millions of predators whose job it is to eat them. I mean...
Let's talk about this, too, with the big one here. I saw a lot of these on the assembly line there. As Snapper is open, looks like Snapper will be closed after this weekend. Is that kind of what your feeling is here?
Fortunately for me, that's Colonel Bannon's decision. I just handle the science part of it. Okay. So
looking forward on quotas, right? So we were basically cut in half this year with the federal regulations cut in half. Looking forward, it looks like maybe next year, where we are, maybe up another 100,000.
I think we're going to get a few more. The Science and Statistical Committee I'm on for the Gulf of Mexico has approved an increase, and that's going through the process of going through the Fed review process and all that other stuff. So we're pretty confident we're going to get a small bump, and hopefully that'll be able to bring us a little further into August. But, you know, the weather has just been so great. On the weekends, I mean, we've had bad winds and things like that, but on the weekends, for the most part, the weather has been awesome. So we've eaten up the quota fairly quickly compared to last year. You know, because last year we didn't even harvest our whole quota.
Yeah, we
didn't even harvest what we've harvested already, and a lot of that is just the bad weather. You know, we are seeing after a lower harvest last year, probably see it from this year, lower harvest and average size, that's ticking up a little bit. We don't have all those monsters in the population that we did coming off 3 to 9 day seasons, but we see that the average size is increasing slightly, and that's what we think, that we being Marine Resources and me advising them based on the data we collect, that this level, this 600,000-700,000 pound level, we think is probably the right sweet spot to getting some higher average size and still yet a long enough season for anglers to enjoy.
Yeah, and I think about your part of the science, and then we talked about Director of Marine Resources, Colonel Bannon. It's a human element as well. And I remember a couple of years ago at the boat show sitting there, and when gas prices were going so high, I said, this is going to have an effect on how fast or how slowly we go through the tonnage. And that's not even like a science question. That's a human question. You know, you look at these levers here. Okay, here's the tonnage, but how fast do we go through it? You said, number one, weather. But number two, I think, you know, if gas is 97 cents a gallon like it was when we were in college, then we go through it a lot faster than if gas is, you know, $4 a gallon. Or, I mean, there's a certain number you could take that up. If gas goes to $8 a gallon, how much less effort there would be to catch a snapper. You know, so you've got the science portion of it, but then there's these other levers out there, gas prices and weather, that drive how fast we fish it.
Oh, absolutely. And I shouldn't offend my other colleagues in disciplines. Social sciences, economics are all real sciences. So when we refer to science, we're more talking about the biology.
Right. Okay, biology,
There's science and the socioeconomic studies as well.
But that's part of it.
But you're
right.
I mean, what is the tipping point? Well, we talked about just personally as fishermen that we'll still take that first, maybe second snapper trip. But that third or fourth, if I'm paying that much.
Yeah, I mean, if you fill that tank up a couple times in a row, you start going, ouch.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
So that all comes in. And like I've often said, you know, luckily those decisions are Colonel Bannon. So.
That is, that's his job and not your job. Your job is to continue with the assembly line here at Fishmas at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Folks come by, watch Dr. Powers and his crew work. And we'll talk to you tomorrow during FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.
Absolutely.
All right. Great work. And we're coming right back. More of our coverage of the 90th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo from right here on the rodeo grounds on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, and we are live on Dolphin Island here at the rodeo site for the 90th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Big thank you to Tackle This, Tobias and Comer Law, and Greer's Markets for making it possible. And we'll be doing it again tomorrow for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Runs from 11 to noon. And, yeah, we're still getting your text at the Ascension Technologies text line, 343-0106. And program note, because I'm in rodeo mode, constitutional quiz this week is moved to Monday. So you know how they always do, like, the holiday and the holiday observed? A constitutional quiz is always on Friday. A constitutional quiz observed is going to be on Monday's Midday Mobile when I'm back in studio. So do not fret. Keep your constitutional knowledge at a high, high level and be ready for Monday's show. All right. I said this earlier. I like things that are counterintuitive. It's just in life. And so we're at the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Fish everywhere. And my man, Joey Mason from Mason Hills Farms here serving beef.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, I like that. So, I mean, you go, okay, let me think. Fishing rodeo. Let's go down and get some meat.
That's right.
And you were like, when people walk in, when y'all walk in, you'll be able to smell what's going on as you come in the front of the rodeo there. And not far down, maybe 10, 20 yards in, you'll be able to sample some of this great beef from Mason Hills Farms. Nice play.
Yeah, yeah.
You seem to be a popular booth as people come in.
Yeah, you know, we're right across from the gutter leaf folks.
Yeah, and so just to give you all a little behind the scenes, because I like to do this. I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble. So, the leaf filter people there. And so Joey's started beef with them. You started a little trouble with them.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, you'll see a little talking back and forth between the two booths. Yours is way more popular because you're serving meat.
Yeah, it's just been a lot of fun, right? Yeah. We're smoking the meat, the briskets, and we got some short ribs, and we're sampling some of the hamburgers. And all of it we're giving out a sample because we want to show that our beef is better.
Yeah.
And you can cook it just like we do, and I'll take you behind the scenes if you want to come and look and see the smokers that we're using.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think they have some here for sale,
yep.
And they let me use one of theirs, and it's just been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun, and it's pretty tasty fun. And if people haven't heard you and I talk about this before, this idea of people like, and maybe during COVID it hit harder where people said, I want local, and it went through vegetables and fruits and all that stuff and local crafts and all that. And then you brought this for the meat side of it.
That's correct.
Instead of like, hey, there's a supply chain, and because there's an issue at, you know, whatever big meat packer way away, we didn't have meat. If you bring it here locally, it's just like local vegetable stand.
Well, it is. And so we own the cows, and now we own the processing plant that's right there on the farm.
Yeah.
You're in Grand Bay. Yeah, we control everything. From start to finish.
Yeah, because if something happens in St. Louis and Dalhart, Texas or something, it doesn't affect us down here because the cows are here, the process is
That's
here.
Correct. And we're not doing lab-grown meat either.
Yeah, okay, listen. So that whole thing, I don't know why they keep pushing this, but they are, man.
Yeah, we just decided with the farm that we weren't going to do a lot of things. And we were going
lab-growing meat's
not
one of them.
It's just not going to be it. We're not gluing our meat together. We're not, it's just how it used to be done. It's beef done right.
Yeah, and it is. And you have, like, what I like is you have the things we traditionally expect.
Yes.
The cuts and the burger and all that. But then, like, I've talked about the tomahawk steaks I get from you. Yeah. That was new to me. I'd heard of them, but I had never seen. Man, that's like, especially for my son and I, because it's got because the bone's out, it's kind of Fred Flintstone style. Like, that's like our favorite.
Yeah. They got the cowboy steak, too, and the Thor's hammer is going to be coming out. That's pretty new.
The Thor's hammer.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll take and show it to you,
okay.
People can go online and look at it. And,
yeah, as we talk about going on there to order, you can also kind of peruse the different cuts.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do is make it easy so you can add it to your shopping cart, and we'll be able to deliver it to you within a few days.
That is, and that part of it, too, when I talk to people, they're like, so what's the deal? Does he really deliver? I said, yeah, he really delivers.
Yeah, he really delivers.
Yeah, it's a great thing. What is, like, as you look at what people click on most or most interested in, like, what cuts are, like, the most popular?
You know, obviously, the fillets are really popular, and the ribeyes bone in, because people like it where the meat is a little sweeter towards the bone, and they really enjoy that, and then they give the bone to their dog.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a two-for-one here.
So it's the humans and the canine's favorite.
That is correct.
So talk to people, too, if they want to come by. You're doing a thing where people can stock up in a big way, like buy into a cow.
Yeah, so you can, right now what we're doing is for $250, you can get on the list for a cow. whether it be a half, a whole, or a quarter. And we're taking payment here, and okay. You can get on the list. Online, it's a little bit more money, but here we're doing a special.
Okay, in person.
Correct, in person. And then if you mention that you heard me talking today, I'll give you a cutting board.
Oh, sweet.
That has our logo on it. We're just trying to get the name out so that you can cut our beef on our cutting board.
Hey, I heard you on Midday Mobile. Can I get a cutting board?
Yeah, sure.
All right,
yeah,
good. Yeah. And this idea, too, like on the cow, like maybe your neighbors or whatever, you could say, hey, y'all want to go in together.
That's
and get a whole cow, you know. And
yeah, and we can box it up, separate it a little different, mm-hmm. and, you know, just try to take care of everybody the best way we can.
All right, so you're going to smell what's going on when you walk in the rodeo at Mason Hills Farms booth. Stop by, take a sample, and get signed up. Joey, thanks for stopping
in. Sean, thank you so much.
All right, we'll see y'all tomorrow for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.